I must indicate that where I'm set, I don't want to be you, Minister Deputy. I was wondering, maybe, first, this are some of the challenges that you really have to go through. I know it has been a very difficult time for this department, but as this committee, I think we are not going to add. It will tend. I'm not committing myself, but it will depend on the issues that we are going to discuss, as we are aware that we'll be getting a briefing from your department on the strategic plan and the annual performance plan. We are aware that this is a strategic plan and planning for this year, but we expect that towards the end of the year, when you come and report, you must report on the issues that we have tabled here. I don't expect that when we say come and report, you'll come and report on said issues that we didn't even present here. This is the plan. I think we should take it on that note that we are dealing with a plan which will be, for us as members of parliament, a monitoring tool for us, because we'll be judging you, monitoring on the issues that you have committed yourself. On that note, let me just start by introducing myself. I'm Wendy McCarthy from the Northwest Coast, the chair of the Select Committee. Honorable members, can we then?
I'm being Mwale from Gauteng.
Gauteng from Northwest.
Kelebong Diosilo, Miriam Shodi from the Free State Province. Thanks.
Michael de Valiers, Western Cape.
Good morning, my name is Willem Faber and I represent the Northern Cape province.
Can I move to the department?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. My name is Bobby O'Brien, DG of Basic Education. I'm going to start here with DG Gugu Ndebele and then we'll work that way.
My name is Gugu Ndebele, DG Chief of Social Organization and Support Services, DDE.
Good morning, my name is Mrs. Amulele, CFO in the department.
Good morning, my name is Carol Nuga Deliwe, Strategic Planning Research and Coordination Chief Director.
Good morning, I'm Anton Skuman, DDG Administration in the department.
Good morning, I'm Gary Piyachi, DDG Planning Information and Assessment.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Tamba Bajano. I'm the acting DDG responsible for Disaster Human Resource Development.
Good morning, I'm Anna Surti from the Northwest, but representing the National Department of Basic Education.
Pira from GM, I'm Angie Mutseha from Gauteng. Representing the Department of Basic Education.
The problem is that you are speaking to yourself, and we want when we interact, we should exactly know who we are talking to. Can I request to repeat?
My name is Colleen.
My name is Stephen from CBE, Strategic Planning and Support.
My name is Linda Fokulu, from CBE.
Ismail Hussain from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Randall Fund and Gifford from the Office of the Minister.
I'm morning. I'm the Secretary.
Good morning, Honorable. My name is Linda Stossila. I am the Chair of the Committee.
And then Baloyi, Senior Secretary.
Let me check
it. Certainly, apologies. Only one apology was two. Honorable Boroto, she is attending Intelligence Committee. And Honorable Blackie is off sick.
Thank you. Without any waste of time, let me check
it.
Honorable members and colleagues, officials from the department, ladies and gentlemen, Chair, on behalf of the department, I really want to thank you and the support that as a department you've received from this committee in respect of the challenges that we have had to deal with, especially in the Eastern Cape and Pobo Education Department, and want to sincerely express our gratitude for this opportunity to present our annual performance plan. Like we have said it many times before, as a department, we remain committed as ever to deliver quality education to every child in our country. I just want to reflect on a few issues without going into detail, because there's not time, so we'll just quickly run through some of the few issues with your permission. So I want to report that indeed we're witnessing progress in our all policy areas that we agreed upon in 2012-2013. Namely, which is the curriculum assessment and policy statement, the assessment, workbooks, and full infrastructure. As a sector, we have clear evidence that South Africa's school system is on an upward path when it comes to quality learning, and it has been confirmed by the international chief results, which were released last year, 2012. And again, with invitation, we could come and give you a team's report, but it's a very encouraging and a pleasing report that does confirm that we are definitely on an upward trend, because being a concern of the country that even in international benchmarks we don't perform, but there is clear evidence that we are moving up. So you also recall that we also spoke about the rollout of the annual national assessments across all primary schools, which we think is also a milestone in our schooling system. As members will be aware, for all the years, we could only access the system from its national senior certificate results, which was not very helpful because it only had a sense of what was happening in the SET phase and had no sense clearly, fully, of what challenges were with primary schooling. But now with the annual national assessment, we have a full sense of what is happening throughout the schooling system. It's been quite painful, but to really get the results that we've been getting, but also extremely useful to really know what are the problems with our foundation phase, our intermediate phase, and senior phase. And those problems are also confirmed by the NIDU report, which we released last week, Thursday, that some of the main challenges in our system are where it matters most in our primary phase. So this year, we commit ourselves to intensify our focus on the three T's, on teachers, on text, time, on task. Because we believe anybody in education will know that you can teach in your kitchen as long as you use the time effectively, efficiently, and your teacher is geared, you are bound to get good results. But if your teacher are not geared, there's no text to use, and you don't use your time effectively and efficiently, doesn't matter where you are, you will not get the results. So we'll be working hard to have teachers in schools, in class, teaching at least the required hours. We'll build on the work done to improve the skills of our teachers. Our advances in this area include the integrated strategic framework for teacher education and development in South Africa, whose implementation will scale up. Because again, from the NIDU report, it's quite clear that things have to do lots and lots of work, especially in the phases that we're targeting, your foundation phase, the intermediate phase, and the senior phase. We also this year will be emphasizing the optimal use of workbooks and textbooks. But again, we're quite proud to say, through this program of workbooks, we've managed to increase the circulation of materials, because there was also a huge dire need of material in our schools. but also textbooks may not have covered 100%. But when we did our assessment last year, we stood at 80%, which is not good enough. You know, to who want it to 2014? But we only compared ourselves. We're also controlled by parents. We'll only reach 2014, a full coverage by 2014, and that's what we hope our provinces will be able to do. So we are providing national books, learners free of charge. We've been able to confront the major barrier to learning, which has been inadequacy of good books in homes and schools, especially in the poorer communities. So in 2012, around 114 million full color national books have already been distributed to schools. South Africa themselves have indicated through state survey that the rating of the school system has improved, with the largest improvement perceptions being the relation to the ability of books in schools. The provinces will do more to work further to improve the high quality textbooks for all learners. This is an area which we have and we continue to pay attention. So we're working to push hard that by 2014 we have a book for every learner in every grade. We have introduced a new catalogue chair of approved textbooks for all grades, and these were provided to provinces. In 2013, among other things, we focus on improving accountability. We'll ensure there is appropriate use of time by teachers and officials at schools and district levels. We're also open to saying that not necessarily against the other challenges inhibiting delivery of quality and learning. And working with province, therefore, plan to improve performance across the system. Because what we're admitting here, without hesitation, that despite all the good things we've put in place, the challenges still remain enormous. We'll use our sector plan as a framework for this work. Improving performance is also the heart of the performance agreement with the president. I spoke at length about the strategic interventions during the vote, and we have made bold to say our interventions are now bearing fruit. Colleagues, you know that some of these interventions we have introduced in 2009 to improve on quality, equity, efficiency, and access. Strengthening the curriculum, supporting classroom is central to our work. We want to improve curriculum implementation on assessment activities at school and district, monitor teachers' attendance, punctuality, the proper use of resources, quarterly reporting systems to strengthen provincial, district, and school level using nationally developed templates, tools. School infrastructure remain an area of great concern. We will continue paying serious attention to it as a sector, improve expenditure on infrastructure budgets, and the number of completed projects in the last financial year are indicators that we are beginning to make progress also in this area. For this financial year, we are planning to replace 200 inappropriate schools, 132 in the Eastern Cape, 30 within the Free State, 3 in KZN, 3 in Mpopo, 5 in Mpumalanga, 1 in the Northern Cape, and 1 in Northwest, and 25 in the Western Cape. We are striving for 25% completion of these projects by 2013-2014. In respect of the Eastern Cape, so when you are saying this school, so okay, I'm not telling you what you're asking, but I'm saying these are the schools we are targeting end of this year, because this is a multi-year project. We'll only strive for 25%, which means by 2015 we'll still see much school. So we'll see much school in 2015. It shouldn't be a shock, because we never said we'll remove all much schools this year. So there will still be a math school this year, there will still be a math school next year. So what we really humbly request to be judged on what we had promised to do. So we've not promised 100% eradication by 2013, so don't visit a math school somewhere and say here's math school, because we never said there won't be a math school. So in respect of Eastern Cape, as we announced yesterday, by end of May, we will hand over the completed schools to the province so they can pass them over, them on official to the provinces. We'll continue to sustain initiatives aimed at mitigating the impact of poverty. We'll use schools to promote access among children to full range of public health. We're working very close with health and poverty reduction services. Also works very well with the Department of Social Development. The government's anti-poverty strategy will progress through it. We aim to progressively remove obstacles inhibiting access to equal quality education for all children. Again, over 8 million, which are almost 82% of our public schools, do receive free education in the non-free paid schools. We recognize the support of parents also to revive the culture of quality learning and teaching. We also emphasize the existing mechanisms at NELAC accord on basic education, like QLTC, and we will be again requesting to brief the committee on a new collaboration that will be launching now in June with big business, is going to enhance this process. And that collaboration is meant to really consolidate the work we do and help us to get more skills and support, not only in departments, but also across other departments. With some of the issues that inhibit us from moving forward are matters that are not in our control, like access roads to schools are not in our control. But on the other hand, we also realize that we benefit a lot from other departments, like departments of arts and culture, because they have resources for school libraries to see if they can come to the party with them, look at ways of improving access to books, so that even if schools don't have libraries, kids can have access to books. And there are creative ways that are being used by provinces. For instance, teachers and teachers can register in the library, collect books for kids, circulate them, and take responsibility of returning them back to the library. And our main target is access to books, because we are sure that we will not be able, even by 2015, to have every school in the library. And we are really looking at ways of making sure that we improve access to books rather than measure our progress in terms of the number of libraries that are there per school. We know it's not good enough, but I think we're being realistic about that which we can do as a sector to make sure that kids have access to books, because that's the main objective. So this year we'll do this partnership, various partners under the auspices of the Education Collaboration Framework. It's an important development for the current year, and as a blessing of the president and key South African business, but also with major NGOs in education are partnering us in this initiative. The special education task is being set up, and we undertake to provide details on this as a later stage for your invitation check. And lastly, as in good progress in respect of delivery in the current electorate mandate, our plans for this year are meant therefore to improve on our gains and to address those systemic, deep and historical issues so that will allow us to create the system. And we believe that if we continue to improve at speed, we have done and plan to do this and for the rest of the FTAF, the lives of ordinary South Africans will continue to improve fundamentally and will face a better future as a country and as a continent. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Minister. I trust, Minister, when you talk to the issue of mass schools, you will also refer to this unsafe schools, because there are schools better, you know, when you compare them to mass schools are better. But we'll engage with that.
Can I clarify? I think it's a mistake. We refer to them as mud and unsafe schools. For instance, in areas like Gauteng, they'll be removing schools like asbestos schools. They're not necessarily dealing with mud schools. They're dealing with zinc schools built from plants. So it is part of the program. And so if you see, for instance, Gauteng, it will not be a replacement of a mud school, but it will be a replacement of an unsafe school.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, and Minister. In view of time, Honourable Chairperson, I'm going to go quite quickly through the presentation. You will guide me if it's too fast. The presentation was circulated beforehand, and it does cover a lot of ground. These are the sections in the presentation. The most important part for the purpose of this presentation is part B and part C, i.e., the purpose of this presentation is to prepare honourable members for the debate on both the themes which is taking place next Thursday. Now with that, I need to make a few points by way of introduction, and those touch on the points that the honourable chairperson raised at the very beginning. The first one is that we are required in law to make this presentation in relation to our budget, and this budget has got to do purely with that which is allocated to the national fund. And that's a small portion of the money that's spent in provinces. By definition, this committee is interested in what's happening in provinces. The bulk of the money is spent in provinces. But the purpose of this discussion is about books of tea. So it's a very small amount. Ordinarily speaking, honorable members are interested in what is being spent on textbook curriculum and intervention in particular provinces. But these are not covered in this particular presentation on the paper. So just to make that point. Therefore, when honorable members notice the indicators, you will see that these indicators don't speak to a sector at all. And the reason being that we've got to only list those indicators for which we are using vote 15 funding. We cannot list other indicators. So let me then make this point on the sector. It's important to stress that there are indicators for the entire sector. Those indicators you will not find in the DBE APP, because as I said, those are indicators for vote 15. For the first time now, we have a sector plan. And the sector plan is an action plan to 2014 towards realization of fully 2025. It's got indicators for the entire sector. In fact, if you read the detailed document, you will see it's got indicators by province, linked to the context and the performance of the province. So in, for example, Eastern Cape, you'll have a set of performance indicators which are different from the performance indicators in Gauteng. So even though we say we won 60% passes in grade 3, 6, and 9, you will find if you go to Eastern Cape, that 60% is mediated by the conditions in that particular province. Similarly, if you go district by district, you will find that the indicators and the targets listed take into account the conditions of that district. Now, that is the plan for the sector. Those are the indicators and targets of the sector. So, Honourable Chairperson, I said this last year as well, that we'll be very keen to come back to speak on the sector, to speak on the targets of the sector. In fact, what we're trying to encourage and the portfolio committees, the select committees to do, is to have a big session where we even invite provinces to speak to these targets and speak to budget. So the honorable members get that which they teach, which is a total picture of what's going on. Otherwise, I can understand the frustration of honorable members here when we present early on our budget, which is a tiny proportion of the total amount that's going on. So with that introduction, honorable chairperson, I'm going to proceed with the APP for the Department of Basic Education, and then invoke the team. And in doing so, I'm going to go pretty quickly over the contextual factors, because the minister helped me in an introductory comment and an input yesterday, as well as the speech he's made yesterday and other input that he's made previously. But it's clear that our focus continues to be on teachers' guidance, on oversight, monitoring, and reporting mandates. What's important, honorable members, is not just that our focus is on teacher sector size. What's important is that over the last 2 years, we have generated solid information that allows us to understand better that which is going right in relation to teacher sector size, that which is not going right, and that which we need to address. So that's the fundamental shift. You look at ANA, you look at the monitoring business, you look at NIDU, you look at Sims and Pulse, it points to these things. It points to two things. One is that there have been tremendous improvements, and B, our understanding of where challenges lie have been sharpened over this period of time, thanks to the brave steps that the minister took to embark on not only our annual national assessment at the large scale, but also to encourage the international assessment by way of benchmarking our own assessment and our country. These are the achievements which I won't speak about. The minister spoke about it already in input. But it's important, honorable members, to reflect on the trajectory that is underway in the system. A trajectory which is consistent, which means it is being built upon solid fundamentals. It's not a slope that happens 1 year, it will reverse the next year. It's a progressive improvement, it's an improvement that's credible, and you can see it's an improvement that's responding to intervention. Those things together amount to sustainable changes, sustainable improvement. And if you look at this, just in terms of grade 12, you can see that the achievement has been quite sustainable. I'm not even mentioning the reduction in dropout rate, the reduction in repetition rate, the quality of passing that you get through the foundation phase. That even though we've got a huge problem in grade 9, we've now exposed it. And even grade 9 level, it's getting better. TIM shows it's getting better. And it's getting better because of our investments in grade 9, that yielding results. And our grade R, that's returning results, and the foundation phase. So as we go through the foundation phase, intermediate and senior phases, we can see that the priority that the minister set at the beginning of this term, which was to say, yes, focus on grade 12, But we've got focus on the whole system. It's beginning to gain traction and to back focus. Yet again, a quality indicator is not just the pathway. People keep telling us you're obsessed about the pathway in grade 12. No. You see here that the quality of pathway is improving over the years, measured by the proportion of accidents. That's an important one. And by the way, the proportion of bachelor's pathway is not about the 30% pass requirement. This is a pass requirement which is set, we can explain, but it's a pass requirement which is way above 30% and very specific for what you wish to study if you go to university. You can see here that we've seen, because of direct and focused intervention, the improvement of this as a key layer to intervene in schools. And you will see here that over the years, the number of districts that are underperforming or performing at certain levels that are unacceptable have improved. Now, our strategic priorities, which again I'm not going to focus on a lot, the ministers covered this, is drawn from the action plan. It links very much to the NDP. And let me just highlight two important things about the NDP. One is that in the formulation of the NDP, we worked very closely with the Planning Commission. And the Planning Commission found that the action plan already contained a lot of what they thought is important. So that's the first point. There's cooperation and a correspondence between the proposals of the NDP and the action plan. Then after the publication of the recommendations of the NDP, we've been working very hard under the stewardship of the Minister, Deputy Minister and the CEM, to then take those recommendations, which are not sufficiently catered for in action plan, and then to formulate a response to them. I.e., the NDP is our cornerstone of how we formulate priorities in the sector as a whole, not just DDE or government. Because it's very congruent with the action plan, the action plan continues to be a framework that guides us now together with the NDP. And out of that, Honourable Chairperson, you will see the priorities on the screen are very consistent with the detailed report of the NDP. This is the delivery agreement concluded between the Minister, MCs, and other ministries. And you will see here, if you've read the NDP, that these continue to be the key pillars that require intervention if we are going to properly scaffold an education system that is changing and that will be sustainable in terms of quality improvement. And I won't go into details there. These are, again, our priorities. We will continue to focus on learner performance, but with a focus on equity and teaching. The difference between poor schools and non-poor schools, poor learners and non-poor learners, as a key equity. Teacher development, teacher supply and demand, post-provisioning norms, to ensure that we deal with some of the challenges. Let me just pause and make this point, honorable members. We believe that even if you leave things the way they are, at these deep, difficult levels, like for example, teacher development, there are certain things you can do simply by way of improving attendance and school functionality, which can lead to results, yield results. We're seeing the benefits of it. There are interventions like workbook, ENA, CAT that we've introduced, and those have yielded already tremendous results. That's the results we see. Now, not that we're waiting for the other things left, but simultaneously we say, if we want deep and fundamental change, we've got to deal with the teacher in the class. Is it the right teacher teaching the right subject? Is the teacher prepared? Does the teacher have the right commitment and attendance, etc.? Is the teacher supported adequately? Those are the key things you see now in this 2013-2014 priority. We're looking at teacher profiling to make sure that we deal with ensuring that there's the right teacher in the classroom, addressing their needs, and also addressing things like leave management, etc. So this is a key area which really needs to be emphasized. We're also focusing on curriculum and its coverage. The NDP is big on this one. To say the needle report shows that if you focus on curriculum coverage, it's a key thing that will deliver results. There's a challenge, curriculum coverage currently. It's a challenge that even though we have workbooks in some cases, they are not quite adequately. The research is showing they're being applied fairly well, but we believe there's still a lot of room to improve that. And if we improve that, just that, we'll see already the results in the system. So we say there's a number of things in the system already, honorable members. They've got momentum. With the small shift which the minister is pushing through the district intervention and the partnership she spoke about earlier on, you will see that each shift will bear results. And what's reassuring for us, the conclusions which we've arrived at through our planning process are exactly the conclusions arrived at by NIDU through their report. So that's reassuring that we're on the right track. These are the priorities the minister spoke to, so I'm going to discuss them quickly. In terms of the NDC, I've spoken about that. In the interest of time, I'm not going to go into the details of it. Safe to say that on all the proposals, we are responding. In particular, the proposal about partnership, drawn civil society, international educative tech, school management and leadership, high quality instructional leadership, and then turnaround team. All of these, honorable members, have been accounted for and responded for in the project that the minister has spoken about, which she'll announce concretely, and for which a lot of work has already been done. This is about saying that how do we ensure that government money and the substantive amount allocated by the private sector, not comparable to public spending, but still in the region of about 3 billion, how can we ensure that that makes a much bigger difference in these current? The problem with that funding currently is that there isn't a coherent way in which it is applied to the focus. What we're providing here in response to the NDP is a coherent way linked to the priorities I've spoken about. So district by district, for schools that the NDP says are underperforming, they've identified about 20,000 that are underperforming, we say this is the plan. It's a consistent plan for addressing it. It's about teachers, it's about curriculum coverage, it's about accountability issues, attendance, etc. It's about the issues identified by NIDU. And these are what we will address. So again, the key thrust and the explicit recommendations of the NDP are ones that we're taking very seriously and is forming the backbone of what we do. Now, honorable chairperson, I get into the program, which is the start of our budget. And as honorable members are aware, there are 5 programs, and the legislature votes on each program. So we will present, in terms of our APD, the 5 programs, we present the objectives, and we present their indicators. The purpose of program 1 is to manage the department. We've got a number of sub-programs. It's about human resources. It's about improving intergovernment plans. Now, honorable members, these are the targets. Honorable Chairperson, in the past, under your direction, we agreed that I wouldn't read all of these because it would take time. I trust that that would still be the guidance. So I'm assuming that honorable members would have it in front of them, and if they have questions, they'll raise it. But essentially, we've got charges here for officials participating in activities, internships, South Africa's role in multilateral bodies, and we've set charges for all of them. Let me say that from a corporate services point of view, on the chairperson, we've got a very successful internship program. We've got very bright young people who've come in and have consolidated their skills and are doing very well. They've managed to win positions as a result of their skill, and the training program is very active. Some of the products of our training program is sitting around the inner tables here. I don't want to mention their names to embarrass them because they don't like them. Afterwards, they send me outside. But some of them are sitting right around this table here through skills development. They develop solid skills which stand up to any team, even at the university level. So the internship program works very, very well, and you'll see more coming through in the years to come of very bright people, young people who have got into the program. We comply with our financial disclosures. Our audit opinion is unqualified. The CFO sitting next to me here. We had, unfortunately, 2 matters of emphasis. One was something that we inherited from the past. It wasn't our doing. It was about how you go about doing a procurement in an entity outside the department. But we picked that up. The CFO here promised me 2 matters of emphasis in this coming period. The minister is also here as a witness now. Yeah, but she seems to be on track. Honorable Chairperson, we also, in terms of lead management, etc., our corporate services does quite well. We don't have any serious queries there from the AG. In terms of the next program, program two, is the curriculum branch. It's our core business. This one is teachers. It's about developing the curriculum, assessment policies, and monitoring and support the implementation. There are a number of sub-programs, which you'll see here. It's about increasing the availability of e-education, stability and coherence with curriculum, improvements in math science, technology, access to policy material, norms and standards for school library, sound basis for free grade one education, and finalize and promote screening guidelines. If I can go again into the target on the chair question, the minister reported about TECMEC coverage. TECMEC 2007 indicated 45% coverage. In 2011, it indicated already 50% coverage on average. That was 2011. We introduced the workbook in 2012. The catalog started kicking in even further after 2011. So if one then did an assessment in 2012 and do an assessment this year, you'll find that the coverage is even higher. So in a very short space of time, Honorable Chairperson, from 2007 to 2011 and then 2012-2013, you can see textbook coverage and book coverage, workbook coverage in the system increase. We believe this has been a major achievement. Besides that, Honorable Chairperson, the unit price of these books has decreased dramatically. I think that's another important thing to raise. So we are able to produce more, supply more with much less money. And we'll have produced more recent studies to show this. This has been a major success story led by the branch. We've also got a catalog which has reduced the number of titles, made it more educationally relevant, and with reduced costs. So there's a lot else that the branch does in the interest of time. I can see the Honorable Chairperson has looked at a watch. So I'm taking that from you.
No, you can.
Okay. I don't want to deprive the ones at the end here. I'll be very upset too. Okay, then I can go to program three on the chairperson. It teaches education, human resources, institutional development. Also our core business. It's to promote quality teaching, institutional performance with an effective supply and development and utilization of human resources. If you ask us what our core challenge in the system, it's about getting us right. It's about, again, to repeat, making sure that the right teacher is in the classroom, not just a teacher. But you can conform to people in the problem. You say, we put teachers in front of the classroom. Is it the right teacher? And honorable members, somebody who teaches intermediate or senior place is not automatically qualified to teach foundation place. In fact, the opposite. And sometimes people say, nah, this person can teach, you know, grade 9, it's easy, let her teach foundation space. It's a special thing. I taught school, I would never manage to teach foundation space. It's a highly specialized thing. So if you don't put the right teachers there, you are going to have problems. So this is a big thing we want to do in this class. We want to make sure that PDN at the basic level of access, education, vacancies, all that, leave management, is addressed. And then the issue the minister introduced is about attendance and accountability measures. These are the key things we're trying to manage here. And it's a lot that we need to do, but again, in this area, there's labor relations issues. That's a big thing. So we've got to manage quite carefully in this area. But notwithstanding what was in the media, et cetera, on our campus, we've been making quite a bit of progress in this area in terms of performance management, in terms of attendance, in terms of teacher development. And even made it clear now what we knew, that both pre-service training and in-service training is not up to scratch, and that we've got to do something dramatically different. So that's this branch, and we're making a lot of progress here. We've got a number of goals, and honorable members will see the targets here that we set, and our focus going forward in this year will be to consolidate gains we've made, but really make sure that those areas that we've now established the foundation for, that we really push relevant teachers. We believe, like others believe, that the once-off, one-hour-day workshop-trained teachers is not adequate. what people call the micro-institute. We want to have more sustained effort. And when the ministers speak about this program, about district by district approach, it's about saying, let's focus in a district on the ongoing needs of, for example, mental and sanity, and have a program. The deputy minister talked about teacher centers. We've already succeeded quite a bit there. The support led actually by the deputy minister to equip these teacher centers so that they form a resource for ongoing teacher development rather than the micro stuff that we need to do. So here we've set a number of targets. Fundal Lushaka is proving to be a very successful program. The minister has raised with us now the question about managing the aging teacher population. Our members are aware that the average age of our teacher corps is climbing, now around 45. But it's about. So even though per year we lose very few teachers, not many people are aware of this. The international average is 5%. We're on 3%. We lose very few teachers every year. But what's going to happen is when those 45-year-olds come to 55, 60, and retire, then we're going to have an exodus. Then we're not going to be ready. And if we deal with it like that, we maintain a bulk. We move from an aging bulk to a young bulk. It's not good. So what the minister wants to do is to start slowly creating space so we can bring people in from different age groups in the system. What you want ideally in a system is a spread of age. So we're looking at tools and methodologies to say some teachers will reach early retirement age. Let's get incentives for them maybe. They're not in shortage subjects and so forth. To take an exit, and then we bring in younger people, but in a systematic way, not just a bulk of young people, one of them. If we wait, this is going to happen. So that's what we want to do, is to address this problem, and then at the same time deal with supply. The other problem on members, if you have to suddenly train a lot of teachers, we've seen it in our history, that's when quality of teacher training goes down completely, because you are the pressure to push them. You take anyone as a lecturer and let them teach with you. We don't want that situation. So that's a big thing that we're working on, and you can watch us on that. But as it stands now, Fundal Lushaka is proving to be a very successful program. The placement has improved tremendously. The graduates that are emerging are proving to be very good in the system. We still believe that there's room for improvement in adoption, because we're still losing some of that to many private schools in South Africa, even outside the country, because their skills are in demand. Minister was saying yesterday that she was outside the country recently, and they were telling her that they really like South African teachers. They want more. They want to sign an MOU with more South Africans in that country. in terms of program four then, this is physical planning and financial planning, and here we'll elaborate further in question time. But this grant deals with the annual national assessment. Minister spoke about scope and success, and that's going quite well. We ran a grade 12 exam with improving school-based assessments. On the CD, we had a number of challenges. These challenges relate to capacity within government and within the private sector. It relates to the contractors that are implementing prisons appointed and the capacity to manage those contractors. We are addressing all of those things through the PIPP initiative, in terms of sub-13 in particular. We just look at how we formulate a credible, comprehensive plan, but a plan that addresses the challenges as well. And we can elaborate on that. We're also working much more actively with provinces on their own ground to ensure effective spending that goes on there. We'll continue to administer ANA, and we've got the targets to go with that. Educational enrichment, this program is very important for us given our focus on equity and given that we're in a country that got very rich and very poor. Honourable members must bear in mind that it's not entirely accurate to talk about 5 quintiles. Because that first quintile is significantly richer than the fourth quintile. And in fact, 1.3 is very little that separates. So we are a country of largely poor learners. And therefore, when we speak about barriers to learning that derive from poverty, they are widespread in our country, especially in quintile 1, 2, 3. Therefore, this program is a central program. And you will see here that we've developed launched and implementing the integrated school health program, and we are ahead of our target, you know, as we speak. The number of learners in Kuntas 1 to 3 primary school identify special schools that are provided with a nutritious meal, again, where the country exceeded its expectations. We also want to focus on the aesthetics, the fires, the coral and sport participation. Sport is growing. The coral effect is proven to be very, very successful. So we believe that it's slowly coming, but it's coming from a very low rate, but sport activities in schools has improved quite a bit. Then on to check this in terms of the budget. The aim of the department is to maintain, develop, and support the South African school education system for the 21st century, which we're in at the moment. The expenditure increased from 7.9 billion in 2009-10 to 12.9 in 11-12, and increased from 16.3 in 12-13 to 17.5 in 13-14. And this is expected to grow in the medium term. So it's a significant increase. Again, even before we get into the details, honorable members will be aware that the bulk of the money is earmarked fund conditional grants. So it's not money spent in top like you have, money spent in the program. The spending focus over the medium term will be on infrastructure in the form of transfers to provinces and a TD, which is the backlog grant. The operating payments within spending on goods and services affected infrastructure in terms of spending on the medium term. Again, mainly due to big expenditure items like Kari Gure, the mass literacy project, which aims to reduce adult illiteracy, one of our very successful programs, by providing 2 million adults with an opportunity to become literate, and a provision of workbook from grade 1 to 9. In fact, every year, we've been coming in below budget on the workbook. The Treasury has been generous enough to allow us to use the surplus to provide other kinds of books to schools. These are the selected performance indicators here. Honorable members can read it. I won't go into detail here, but it looks at targets over the medium term in terms of Kari Gure, workbook, etc. In terms of the MCF allocation, you see that we grew to 21.3 billion in 2014-15 from 20.3 billion in 2013-14. In the outer year, since 2016, that grows to 22.3 billion rand. And to that, it's added 567, 1.2 billion, and 6.6 respectively. Now, the additional funds which are allocated to the baseline, which I've just read out now, are broken down there below that first subheading, which is conditions of service, which all the funds have to get because of salary negotiations, additional allocations to UMANC, the national initiative to improve learning outcomes, that's 25 million, 30 million, and 40 million. That's 95 million over 3 years. This is the money that will be used for the project that the minister described, intended to attract private sector input considerably more than the amount we've got here allocated from government side. And then the education infrastructure grant, that's not a CD, that's the money we transfer to provinces. That additional of 533, 1.1, and 4.1. So the point about money being taken away from infrastructure is not true. What we simply did was treasury, mutually. We say, one of our mistakes is to expect the market to respond too quickly to a rise in budget. But the market clearly wasn't able to cope with that amount of spending. We therefore spread the spending over a long period of time. And you see it there. Then adjustments to the baseline, we also lost money. Savings on goods and services, 3.4 million. School infrastructure, 733. School backlog, 2.5. And that's a rescheduling, as I said. CIG, 100,000. HIV, 6.6 million. School nutrition, 6 million. So those were the cuts that all departments had to do because of the budget deficit. In terms of the allocation for programs, our administration consumed 335 million in 2013-14, which is 8.4% increase. Curriculum, 1.4 million, 6% increase. And then teachers, human resources, is a 30% increase. Planning, 7.4% increase. Education enrichment, 5.7% increase. And you'll see that the 30% increase is mainly due to the additional education in terms of MFA. That's for consumption. Allocation for program in the MTS. I remember to see here the actual amounts now over the MTA period, including the output here. And you'll see it goes from 17.5 billion to 19.9 to 57 billion. And then according to economic certification, you will see that our department looks very good in that we spent 11.4% on compensation of employees. The other issue is that we've got very little money left for goods and services, 1.8 billion. And the breakdown is given there. The other amounts are really transfers and payments that happen. 13 billion and 1.9. But goods and services for the department itself is 1.8 billion and salaries 3.9 billion. So about roughly 21.3% of our budget is consumed within the department. So there you get it in numbers, what I've just said. And there's a summary of allocation and the percentage of increase and decrease, which honorable members would have noticed. And this is the amount over the MTF period in actual rand figures. And again, it is the breakdown in terms of how our salaries will grow, transfers, etc. will grow over the next year. This now gives honorable members an indication of the money that is not consumed within the department, but which is earmarked and transferred. Carry Gude, which was supposed to have come to its end, has been renewed, and you'll see that we've got generous allocations because it's been a very successful project. We're very happy that it's been renewed. EBWP amount is a small amount which we use to fund the volunteers for Carry Gude, as indicated, 59, 62, 65 million. Workbook, 859,915,957 million. And as I said, we generally come below budget that we use to save to buy additional materials that's needed in terms of the curriculum. IQMS, also a very important mechanism, 39.44 million. Systemic evaluation, 22.25. National assessment, that is ENA, 75, 160, and 167. We're happy it's growing. In fact, we can do it more because, as the Deputy Minister reminds us, we covered 7.2 million learners. A big enterprise compared to even what other countries are doing. And we've got to do it properly. NIDU, 13, 14, and 14 million student program national. That's not the budget for student system, but what you used to mention. 13 million, 16 million, and 17 million. And then honorable members will see below that the bulk of the money to conditional grant. I'll just look at 13, 14, 6.6 million for infrastructure, EIG, school nutrition, 5.1 million. HIV, 213 million, General Aid, 105 million, Technical School Recap, 250 million. And that grows over the MTA. Other transfers to public entities, etc. Our teacher transfers are indicated there. That's a 10% of 1% of payroll. Again, the UNESCO membership fees that we pay every year. Also, ADIA, the African Association, Guidance Council Youth Development, Malawi. 107, 113, 118. National initiatives to improve learner outcomes, 25 million, 30, 40 million, and then Child Life South Africa there as well. The national initiative to improve learning outcomes is new. This is the one the minister spoke about, which will fund the partnership between us and private sector in mobilizing NGO activity towards addressing the challenges with dysfunctional schools in specific districts using specific interventions led by the DBE. And then Sundar Vishaka is 893, 947, 991. Honorable members, this is very impressive. You look at Sundar Vishaka there. By the time we get to the out year, it will be just short of a billion rand. It's a significant improvement in investment. So, honorable chairperson, in conclusion then, the DB will ensure the stability in the entire system is maintained and further consolidated on the three crowd sheets. Central to our plans and activities is to improve learning performance driven by a philosophy which the Minister introduced when she started in 2009, and that is every child matters. Over the period of 5 years, we've maintained that, and we go into this last year of the electoral mandate maintaining still that every child matters. The positive sentiment in the country must be leveraged to pursue the objectives contained in Exercise 2014. And Honourable Chair, when we come back and we report on that sector that I've indicated in my introduction, you will see we've done a review on how the sector has progressed in relation to all of those indicators. And the progress is very reassuring, Honourable Chair. Very reassuring. For example, look at ECG, we've exceeded even what we set ourselves. We have almost universal participation in grade R in the country currently. So, and you know, if you look at grade 12, all of that, you will see those achievements across the country. So we really like to come back and present those progress reports. Centering that, in the last year, in 2014, thereafter, we determined, in terms of the policy ministers put in place, to have policy stability. As far as curriculum is concerned, and other policies. Promoting the utilization of workbooks and textbooks is a big issue for us now. Using NR results to drive learner performance improvement interventions, ensuring that interventions reach the classroom and intended for necessary impact, implementing the provisions of White Paper 6, that's inclusive education, accelerating school infrastructure support, provision, and enhancing levels of monitoring, oversight, and support through this. Thank you very much for the workshop.
Thank you, teacher, for the briefing. I'm just going to give over to members to engage with the presentation. I see one hand. Because I was thinking that while members are still thinking, I'm going to ask the very same question that I asked you, Gigi. Now I'm asking you in the presence of the minister, the deputy minister, that I think at the end of this presentation, one really needs an honest question, an honest answer, that can we say today, Honourable Minister, we have changed the movement from the townships where you see what is happening now. Learners are moving from public schools to private schools. Can we confidently say that, just say, besides the walls and all that, but we've bought one school that is fully equipped with committed teachers, where our parents say that I can't take my child from a township, I feel comfortable to let our children, my children learn in the school instead of moving. You know that movement, which is I want on because this is you answered that question, but I'm still not satisfied. I think now because the minister is here in the beginning, after 18 years, can we say we got the sample? Honourable members, let's start with Honourable Nube in that honourable, yeah, in that order.
No, thanks, Honourable Chairperson. Honourable Chairperson, let me start by commending the department in resolving breaking the impasse which has taken South Africa by storm. We commend you. I will start with the, and thank you for the presentation. I'll start with the correct right teachers in the class. The resolution guiding that is that there has to be another resolution. The South African Schools Act says the SGB will recommend and the department appoints. And you find that department becomes, or the department lies low in terms of ensuring that teachers, the right teachers, get employed in a correct position. So my question would be, how do you What's your thinking in terms of ensuring that when districts or when the provinces employ, the question of putting right people, because what normally happens, the SGPs thinks they are employers. So when they recommend, or a committee is taken to resolve disputes, so how do you intend correcting in terms of correct matching? I think built into that also, it's the cost of redeployment. You were talking about if you are specialized senior phase. When I left teaching, the process of redeployment was a question of, is there any available post so that teachers are not loitering? So you find that most of the teachers, when it started, I think 5 years, the first 5 years was kind of just placing anyway to get a post. And you find that a grade 12 teacher, specialized in senior phase, was the teach foundation phase, and it was so difficult for them. But for them, there's a post. That was what was happening. I'm not sure now, but I don't think that process is stopped. So the question of correct measuring then also, I think it's going to be a challenge, but you can tell us about what you are telling us. How do you think you will correct it? And we should also go to the Funa Lushaka. That is a good intervention. When it was initialized, it was a question of they get these bursaries and placed where they are needed. And the first thing was they need the where they are needed was the rural areas. And so I'm not sure whether the placement now still resembles the plan of getting them through. But also, you then find different appointment strategies from different provinces. You may have two catalogs in terms of beginning of the year, they advertise, July they advertise, and I'm not sure whether when they is there any mechanism that is there in terms of placing them to say how things are running short of this number of men or science, or Eastern Cape are running short of this number. So ensure that when those posts, when that catalog comes out, people that are employed in those positions of men and science are those ones. So the strategy of deploying them where they are needed, and also maybe others who go on the line, who have long been looking for jobs. So a teacher that is specialized in biblical study, I get to teach mathematics. And also, where are we now? So that we don't over-supply maths and science and then have a shortage of languages. When I left teaching, there was beginning to be a try on people, teachers that are specialized on language, on African languages. I'm not sure now in terms of how far is it. So the question of monitoring the basing and the supply. The other one is on the on provinces, on the fiscal discipline. We have mentioned, I think, three provinces that at least are trying to do that. What are your mechanisms? I know provinces, like federal system. What are your mechanisms at, I think I'm not here, committee. CM. What are your mechanisms at both CM and HEDCOM of encouraging and or putting measures there in terms of your expectation and your target? Lastly, is on the National School Nutrition Program. We acknowledge that it has been extended also to secondary schools. However, I think it is also going with the social development. You find that 5 children from a fee-paying school, and you have 5 children there from the same family, and then one is just past magic. He was on a program of nutrition. Now, this one is past. These ones are happy because they're still in school, they get feeling gain. And this one, because he's now out of school, is there any mechanism of engaging with the Department of Social Development in terms of ensuring that that has been addressed? Thank you.
And let me take this opportunity to welcome the citizens. Thanks.
And apologize for starting.
Thanks, Chairperson, and thank you for welcoming me into the meeting. Chairperson, I've got a new member from Eastern Cape. I'm told now that she is in one of the streets looking for parliament. I can't find her anywhere. I have to leave after me. I don't know. She just sent an SMS. I'm somewhere in Cape Town. I was looking for parliament. I don't know where
to make a 101B today.
Thank you, DG. I've got a question on specifically. I want to refer to the Eastern Cape administration post by the department. I just want to know if there are plans, including a budget, to ensure that there is proper administration in this province. And also, how much time is still required to ensure that the province is ready to operate on its own without any intervention from the national department? And Chairperson, also, the second question is on the target. The department has for IPAS rate for ILENDO, the grade 12. It was welcomed that last year the grade 12 was at 73.9%. But the department now is targeting 74%. Why? Why not 85%? Is there any problem maybe that the department, that make the department to only target on 74%? Chairperson, and also the east of the Great Arts, the classes of Great Arts really have developed in the country as much as in Eastern Cape, in my province. Children, most of the children are at school. But do you think the training that the Great Arts has are getting is yielding better results than before, especially at grade 3 level? When you see the results of grade 3, do you feel they think that the results that the grade are so is it fine? Is it fine for the department? Is it improving? Is there any improvement? Okay, my last question is on the inclusive education. The department's strategic priority for 2013 is inclusive education quality improvement. I know it's not going to be easy to have maybe teachers that are already in the system, maybe to train them on Braille and whatever for those kids that are partially blind or are blind. But I want to know. What is the intervention that the department is going to do? Just to help those that are now working in crashes, with crashes, and those that are on wheelchairs. Does the department have a budget that is allocated for the schools that are already built, but a problem for those children to access education because of their disability? Thanks, Captain. I have another 16, but...
Thanks very much. Let me also express my same sentiment, but we thank the department for presenting this comprehensive input for the committee. The first question is, now that the natural attrition is kicking in the department. What is the link between the department and the Department of Higher Education to supply teachers according to the needs of the department, particularly critical subject supply and demand? Second question, Mr. Person, is what mechanism does the department have in place to assist provinces to improve their financial management capacity and enhance their internal controls, particularly the serious weaknesses in leadership, finance, and performance management pointed out by the Auditor General? Another question will be on the educational enrichment services. The implementation of inclusive education has been a challenge in the department. Very little progress has been made since the promulgation of the policy in 2001. How does the department intend to release locations in the implementation of inclusive education, and what are the targets the department set itself for 2013 and 2014? The last question is on technical schools. Is critical to skills development and reducing unemployment. How many technical schools do we have in the country? And how many teachers teach in these schools, and what qualifications do they have? That would be awesome for now.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chairperson. I'll go straight to my question, Honorable Chair. One, on slide number 9, the department outlined some of the key challenges faced by the department as per the strategic plan. But I'm surprised by the learner dropout and retention challenge are not mentioned here. A recent study by the South African Institute for State of Relations has shown that about 50% of the learner between grade 10 and grade 12 drop out of the system. The question is, do the strategic plan and the annual performance plan talk to this issue? Where and how? Two, Honorable Chair, the department has told us in this committee and in other forums that they intend to universalize early childhood development, ECD, in South Africa. Do the current strategic plan and the annual performance plan talk to this issue? What does the plan say? When this thing is happening, is any budget allocated for this project or not? The last one, Honorable Chairperson, there are still reports that we're getting from the public of textbook shortage in some school in Limpopo and elsewhere. And the question is, do the current strategic plan and the annual performance plan include this issue as well? And where and how? Thanks very much, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. My first question is in connection with a percentage, a 30% pass rate in math and science. I just want to ask the department, is there any plan or discussion inside the department to up this 30%, the minimum pass rate? And then the other one is in connection with the ECD practitioners, Chairperson. The department target is to improve on this target, the training of the ECD practitioners. Now, my problem or my question is actually, do you have a plan to increase the grade R classes at the primary schools, the public primary schools? So when those candidates are trained and they are now fully qualified, then we must actually accommodate them at the school. They can't walk outside schools and not inside the school where they can actually benefit, and also the Department of Physical Education can benefit on the training of those teachers. And then the other question is in connection with the quality of the teachers. You were saying that you actually have a plan to find out if the correct teacher and the quality of the teacher is actually the correct class, and do that teacher also teach the correct subject. Do you have information in connection with that, what you need, on each and every school in the different provinces, so that, that we must then have the plan ready where we must implement the correct process to have the quality, the outcome of learners. Then also in connection with the outcry of the shortages on teachers, do you have a plan to address that problem inside the Department of Basic Education? And I'm also referring to the Department of Higher Education, because both departments are actually implicated here. Then, from the search of HRSC, 20% of the teachers are mostly absent on Fridays and Mondays. Now, what plans are actually currently with the department to address this problem at schools, and especially with the teachers? Because I can understand why teachers are actually absent on Friday and why they're absent on Monday. As from my experience as a principal, previous principal from the school, only the principal can address that problem quickly, and not the basic education matter. Start with the principal. And then honorable chairperson, in connection with the curriculum of the teachers at the different universities, do you have an engagement between basic education and higher education on the to address that situation? Because also previously, I think it's 2 or 3 weeks ago, there was some kind of research outcome that teachers from the universities, they're not equipped enough to teach in primary school. Now my question is in connection with that situation. If those teachers at the universities are not equipped enough to teach at primary schools, and there must certainly an engagement between basic education and then also higher education to address the problem there. Now what do you have that engagement, and what is the current situation in connection with that? And a very huge concern of me is the outface of the Little Lady schools 2013 and 2014. Now those schools are actually benefit from that program. Now, when ending that program, what will that school or schools do actually to do something or to help them to educate the learners in that situation where they were a benefit from a conditional grant or something like that, and now they are actually without it? What plan will be in place to fill that gap? The Deputy Minister is frowning.
No, I'm listening very attentively to what you're saying. No. I don't want to miss anything.
That's the only question, Honorable Chairperson. I was worried because the question is not clear.
The last part wasn't too clear, so let's try and get a gist of it. Could you just repeat the last question?
The last one?
Yeah, the last one, in other words, about the withdrawal of the conditional grant.
Yes.
Everything else is very clear. Yes.
Can I hear that? The situation is that at those dinner lady schools, there are some financial benefits.
Okay.
Thank you very much, the chairperson. Also, thank you for the deputy minister.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I first want to know, we did touch on this, was the training of the teachers with the Department of Sport, this integration, sports education, this old PT teachers that we were trying to get off with the Department of Sport. What happened with this program? How far is this? Because I see there was some little small insert of it in here. I just want to know how successful this is and how far we are getting along with it, as we all believe that the health of our children is very important. Then the second one was on the contract of teachers. From what I heard, the contracts have been made of the terms have been shrinked, Now, I would like to know if you can perhaps tell us how short these contracts now are, and if it benefits to, because TDES, if they only have, I'm talking about the contract issues. These contracts, if they are of a shorter term now, it actually demoralized these teachers, I believe, because they don't know they have a job in the next month or the month after that, so they would start looking for greener pastures, and this is the problem that I have. So I would like to know what the, if the standard contract or if different provinces decide on that. And then the crucial problem is that a lot of these teachers don't get paid. I've had numerous complaints of teachers in the Northern Cape, it will also make newspaper headlines today or tomorrow, that of teachers that have not been paid and for 5 months, but these teachers still go to school and they still teach. They still have to pay their cars and they still have to look after their families, but they did not receive salaries. Now to me, that is a problem. And specifically now coming back to contract teachers, these teachers don't want to complain, because now if they complain, they're scared of losing their jobs, but they don't get any contract. So I think this is something that we must look at. This happened previously as well, and it's now put its head out again. I don't know, perhaps in other provinces they've got the same problem. And then I've got a problem with any business, and I believe we should also look at schools and education like a business. We every year have an exact percentage of what we want pass rate on grade 12. But what concerns me is with higher education. Higher education gives us exact percentages on what they want on different outcomes. But I only see on grade 12, on the 74% outcome we want to achieve. I don't see, we already heard from my other colleague here, it actually makes us feel bad to hear how many children only get to grade 12 at the end of the day. So I believe what I want to see as well is, don't we have budgets for each grade, but we say, grade 10, we want this percentage of children to pass grade 10. Because it's not just looking at the grade 12 results and saying 74%, but how many children did we lose along the way there? So I would like to know, why don't we see budgets, not budgets, but percentages on pass rates, that we as the Department of Education are saying, we want a pass rate of 60% at least at grade 10. In grade 8, we believe that we need at least 85% pass rate. I would like to see targets like that set, which I don't see at all. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Before I give over to the statement, I just want to add, actually, the issue of the ECD, we welcome and we appreciate also even the enrollment, the number. But I think as the select committee, what we are more interested in is the quality, the output. Because what is happening, you know, if you go to this classroom, the issue of the resources, the learning materials, and one doesn't even pick it up how the department is planning to improve on that, because this is the reality, this is actually what is happening. And for us to achieve whatever that we want to achieve, we have to focus on the foundation base. I think if we're not doing good there, we'll never, you know, achieve what we want to achieve. The issue of the resources and learning materials, the quality there. The other thing is the issue of the subject advisor. DG spoke about subject advisor, but when you go to schools and or when you interact with principals, this is also a challenge, where you find a subject advisor, a person is a subject advisor, but doesn't have skills, it's not specializing. How do we intend to address that? We department wants to improve on that and science. But we are still having this problem of improper combination of subjects. I just want to know what is the role of the department to ensure that, because if we miss at that level where combination is not proper, how are we going to achieve that? How are we going to ensure that we achieve our target? lastly, on the issue of the target, I must indicate that for us as the select committee, your target is annual based. But one is more interesting if maybe we can say quarterly. Out of the annual target, but quarterly, this is what we want to achieve. So that it becomes easier for this committee also to do its oversight.
The chair will share the response to officials so then a certain PM will add on, and I think officials will pick up especially on the specific technical ones. And I'm saying this with all due respect because it sometimes is very helpful to delineate that which we should have accountable for. We're presenting to you what will be 7% of the national budget of education, the 17 billion, 7% of what is the national budget. But also, in public, I can't say to people when they ask me questions to say, I don't buy textbooks, because people know that there's one country, one nation, one national department. But when I come to Parliament, I expect, as I say, with due respect, parliamentarians also to appreciate that I set up policies, I monitor and support them. I don't buy books. So I can go as far as saying this is the standard for books and monitor if that standard has been met. With very little power also to do anything if you don't meet the standard. And on a point M is 0.8 OT, so to monitor and report that the standards are not met. So I'm really thankful so that we really then when we answer, people know how far is national, that's 7% budget, which I'm not comparing. I think it's quite useful to have the structure that we have. But some of the questions I think members of the NCOP, it's questions that together with yourself should take to provinces. Right? So that we, because I can't be held accountable for things that I don't have powers over. So I thought I should raise it as a starting point. But I really like the chairperson's question because, and that's what the only first question about whether we have, are we stopping the tax or the trend around private schools? And chair, for me, private schools are not where the problem is. The public sector is still 96% of the schooling system in the country. It's less than in most international countries. When people become affluent, they change their lifestyle, they buy bigger cars, they go into town. So that's not where for me the problem is. Because people don't always make those movements in terms of the new economic status. You want your kids to sit in bigger schools, smaller classes, you move to affluent areas. It's a normal thing. The big issue is within the public sector itself, which is where people, I think, rightfully have been accusing us to say that within this 96%, we have different systems. Where kids don't move to private schools in Soweto. They go to other public schools in Lenin. They go to other public schools outside Soweto. And I think that's what we should be talking about. But the comparison of people moving to private schools, actually it's not a big issue. They say it's just not an issue because the public sector is more than 86% of the schooling system. So 4% can be an issue. I think it's normal actually because we do want to give expression to what is in the Constitution, we should recognize this public and private schools. People take kids to private schools for different reasons, for religious purposes, children with special needs, where you find that the big system is not catering. If you have the slow learning, you find that the big system is not catering, you take your kid to a private school. So it's a very healthy issue. So I would raise the question to say, in the public sector, we find instability where kids start in their communities where they are and get the education. That's what our first to be ASP. And I can say, not as yet, because that's why you will find parents, kids of parents who work, they'll go to learn, you know, color schools, your Indian schools, white, your predominantly white schools. That's the instance that we've seen. But if, as you were asking, is there any sample where we can say there is no movement? I think I can speak quite easily for how they, that indeed there is. If you go, and I'll make an example of where I live, in Midrand, you look at that Ivory Park, Tembisa Delta, there's huge stability, because schools there for children now. Because parents are not content about if they produce results. In this Midland area, there's no high school that produces less than 80% pass rate. Never. It's simply because I saw the stability. If the public sector produces results, there's instability when they don't produce results. In your Limpopo area, your waterbed, where is our biggest problem? In your small schools, that's why we have said provinces must consolidate. Where we have small schools, multi-grading schools, and kids, schools with bad teaching. So where we get zero passes, it's in multi-grade schools. In your small schools where you find 35 kids from grade R to 12, you can't have proper teacher provision in there. And that's why there's no effective teaching, and that's what you are beginning to address. It's in your rural areas where we meet lots of problems, where the traveling is impossible, it's difficult to recruit teachers back. Last when there's a problem in Northern Cape, for instance, again, it's a lesson that you're picking up. When kids, kids were put in a boarding school because of the problems, we got good results. Right? Because there were many in the same place who could provide for them. They didn't have to go home. And that's where we have problems. And those are the things we have to address. So what I'm saying to what you have to address is where there's poor leadership in your township schools, where there is especially hard to reach areas where you can't attract teachers, where there is, as I say, your multi-grade schools, and as I say, it's unfortunate that provinces are really not moving quick enough. I don't know whether they were set by the Western Cape experience. But you really do want schools to consolidate, rationalize, and really bring schools together so that they can have effective provisioning. Because we'll end up with more teachers than learners in a school. If we don't consolidate, there are schools in the Eastern Cape that are called two children schools. Can't be a school. In case they tell you have a school, one child school. We think here in Eastern Cape, 11 children schools. Those are not schools. You can't provide properly. Right? So this question of rationalization, we're not saying provinces should run roughshod at communities, but they have to do it if we get the results. But also on the other hand, we're encouraging provinces to start putting up boarding schools so they can feel the difficulties. The rainy season, I mean, Eastern Cape, there's a lot of rain. They cross dangerous rivers, they get discouraged, there are no schools sometimes. Up to now, this is the areas where there's no school. And for me, that's where the problem is. Not so much the movement between private and public schools. But from where I sit, the private system, it helps also to have another healthy sector of education, which helps people. We want to benchmark assets both internal and external. So it's also quite healthy to have, I think, a position against which we benchmark ourselves. For me, the bigger problem between the public sector itself, that we have to bring stability. So I'm just taking the first one, as I said, colleagues will take the technical one. I want to take this one also about not all the points that Member Nubi raised around the right teacher in the right place and the policy change. You see, we have good policies which are, it's a very good policy, and I'm sometimes very reluctant to change policy because of difficulties with implementation. For me, it's very happy for community to choose their leaders. I mean, look at what happened in Mozambique School. That's good succession planning. And you don't want to take this away from them. Where parents themselves take responsibility, they are there. And you want that person, you want to be there every day to make the principal accountable. You want this principal to be accountable to the very governing body which is there on a daily basis. And for me, it's healthy that principals, that governing bodies have that power. But now we have a very difficult situation where communities, especially poor communities, are manipulated by strong teacher organizations. So there's just a good policy is just not working, simply because there's lots of manipulation. And I'm saying, because they'll find a way of not killing a good policy because we have lots of difficulties. Either we say all non-paying schools, we are going for them, which is unfair also for that. If you don't have money, then you don't have the power, right? So it's just getting that balance right. But I still think it's very important to have the parents' voice in the appointment of even of teachers, right? But if a teacher is accountable to a person who's not anyway, so who's somewhere, not accountable directly as a principal saying, it does undermine your power, but it's an area which is very difficult to manage. There's good policy, but it's completely manipulated, especially in poor, vulnerable communities. Well, that's what is happening. Depends which union you belong to, then all of them take post. So let's make this example of the school where my mother said, I'm told the principal, even students still teacher the records and go and open accounts with them. I mean, the whole school principal. I'm telling you, I mean, she has the records in her book of teachers. And that's when the things are with. I mean, those teachers said, even so, that, I mean, whoever appointed that person was cruel to that community. So that's why you have a small, a bigger problem. So she thought that we just raise that one around the distinctive one, the administration budget. I'm saying we're talking about seven. The budget for Eastern Cape is almost 3 times my budget. So there's no way I can give Eastern Cape money. What they have to do with their budget is to do things right. I have 7 billion, they have almost 21 billion as their budget. So, and that's what the guy has been to them, to say, you're bringing money for this interview. I said, what money? Money is in your head. And because we've really insisted on that, they've even been able to make savings. So they know, get things right, there's no money coming. There's money in your budget. So there's no budget outside the Eastern Cape. The question went, how long could we, I want to come back to you twice and to say, we really do think there is progress, not in terms of forward movement, but in terms of stability. We think things are in place for the province to start moving. They've been able to appoint a very good CFO. They've been able to appoint that, I think, is a very strong SG. So I really think they've appointed a very strong SG. So the fundamentals are in place. They're still trying to cross out. So the problems are too deep. So there's no light for me at the end of the tunnel. Right? There's still no light, but there is, as I say, fundamentals in place. And what I think we should do now as national department is not to run them now. It's to support them from behind so they have the right people in place. I don't think they'll be out of the woods quite soon. When I spoke to the CFO that was sent to the Eastern Cape, he said it's going to take more than 2 years to sort out the books because things are just too deep, too historic, so it won't happen now. So even if we could stay for 2 years, it won't make any difference because they still have to do the things that they're supposed to do. There were 3 auditing companies working there. So all the things that need to be done are being done. They are auditing leads, they are auditing all the things, but it will not take them. The CFO said to me, next year we'll not get an unqualified report. They're still going to get an unqualified report because the issues are still deep and difficult. But what is very encouraging now in the Eastern Cape is that the fundamentals are in place to get a forward movement. So all we have to do is not to leave immediately, but to support them to move forward so that they really don't slide back with them. So we do lots of work to have them. Even last night we left offices late, helping them with legal, DM is their lawyers dealing with all legal issues. They have lots of cases that are old that we have to ask. So there's no immediate hope or light, but there is hope that the Eastern Cape. So when Lemerson talked about training and inclusive education of great art teachers, I can say also honorable member from the Eastern Cape. Eastern Cape actually is doing quite well with great art coverage. It's the highest. If I'm not mistaken, it's the highest in the country. And it shows in the results. It's a pity we've not even in Harikude. So we've not been able to bring you just the results to say what are the improvements. The Eastern Cape results from our monitoring test are very good. It competes quite well at the foundation phase, and we are seeing evidence of a very good, solid ECD program. They only start deteriorating when they go to the intermediate, but I'm grade 3. There's clear evidence between the ECD. The grade R and the grade 3 results. Things just go bad when it goes to higher grades and they start going down. But as far as that, it's going very well. And that's why even in Prime Minister, I couldn't tell you this fast that I think what's thinking is number 4. Or number 3 in terms of penetration. Yeah? Yeah? It's much lower. So when Mr. Smart was saying we should look at Western Cape, I think it doesn't have the full picture. Eastern Cape is leading on this matter and showing from their foundation results. KZN follows. It also shows on their foundation results. So Eastern Cape actually is the one. There's also this issue about dropout rates, which I think, again, and I'm speaking those that I think are broad issues that I really would love to share with you. It is a matter of great concern. I don't want to say it's exaggerated, but I think it's enough to say it is a problem. And we need to identify where it happens. It happens around your 16 and 18 year olds, and you know who 16 and 18 year olds are. If your young teenagers, the issues of, and really, the social issues that are affecting this, so which are out of our control, which requires us to work with other structures. And that's why we work very close to social development. Where questions of teenage delinquency comes in, your teenage pregnancy, your criminality, your drug abuse, so it does become this. But there are also issues which belong to us, which we have to attend and have to admit to. And it is around the qualitative teaching, which we think with the new approach of ANA, that throughout the grades, there's no external exams. Primary teach, there was no assessment, they do their own internal assessment. When kids go after the senior phase, for the first time they are confronted by very tough assessment standards. And you see the failure rate is high at grade 10 and 11. Because the FPT is the FPT phase, is for the first time they are confronted by very tough assessment standards. And they fail repeatedly and drop out. So we're addressing that by beginning to address and making sure that assessments throughout trained teachers keep properly, so by the time they go to grade 9, they're not confronted by tough assessment requirements for the first time. Right? But schools that teach well, right, that perform very well, we have good pass rates from grade 8, 9, 10. They don't have this huge dropout. Schools that pass kids well and teach well, even when they go to grade 11, the kids fail at about 10%, then they don't have huge dropout rates. Schools that have 20% failure rate, 30% failure rate, they have 30% dropout rate. Right? So it is an issue that we're taking. But we're saying it's more than us. And that's why even the whole thing of community mobilization is important. It's also access to schools. When you find in some rural areas, go to Limpopo, there's no high schools in the area. Kids have to travel, it's not impossible to say, then just give up and just not go there. So there's also quite a number of things that we're dealing with to try and address the question of dropout rates. It is a matter of concern, but we're saying, and I'm not using it as an excuse, because I think we're a smart country, we don't compare ourselves to the West, but we're not the West in the West. It's a normal trend. I mean, if you look at what are the completion rates in the U.S., go and look at your completion rates in Britain, they're not very different. 16 and 18 kids, by and large. It's a difficult cohort sometimes to deal with if there's dysfunctional homes. It's not an easy cohort. These 5-year-olds, you can chase them to school easily, and they do go to school innocently. So, Jim, I don't want to take a lot. I think the right teacher in the right place, I think we'll talk about it, but it is also a big issue. Minimum pass rate, I think we also talk about teacher training. Yeah. The other thing is that even the payment of teachers, what is very useful, we have a bunch of schools, this is under pressure, where some of the things that are not a responsibility. So if teachers are not paid, it's not us not paying them, but we're not saying we can't do anything about it. They are brought to us and engaged with the province, pay them. But the provinces that employ teachers, provinces that pay them, provinces that also do in the main instead. We only set up the standard for saying this is what you think teachers should be paying around. We don't have to do it. But because through this provincial coordinating unit, when there are issues around provinces, they're brought to us and we engage with our provinces to do them. And so since we don't have, and I think that's why, and if they still don't pay, they don't pay. I can't say to MEC, you're out of your office now, you've not been paying people. Can only complain to the province. The province not doing anything about you. That's the end. Unfortunately, that's the end of the story. But what we always encourage, especially the POP members, to work that provincial unit that we have. If there are such cases, they get reported to us to take them down. Same with textbooks. All we can do is set up what I've done for textbooks. That must be a book per child. But the money is with the province. They're the ones who are buying the province. So if books don't arrive, we can engage the province and raise the concerns that are raised by members. But we don't take full responsibility, or we don't take any responsibility for implementation. But outside here, I can't say that to the public. To say, don't ask the province. It's not mine. I just do policies, monitor, and support. I don't implement, I don't buy, I don't pay. So if they're not paid, go to the province. Well, that's what the answer is. Go to the province and get them and ask them why they're not paid. But as I said, we can't do it because we're a national, one nation, one department, you know, to get me to South Africa. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Chair. The minister has dealt with many of the issues, but what I'll try to do is just amplify or augment whatever necessary and deal with the issues. And obviously, the refinement will take place through the officials of the department. With regard to the examples, there are some good examples. You ask, you know, is there a single school? Go to Mbilwe, go to Denbrook, go to the Thabo Mafutsanyane, there's a high school that I visited there personally where kids are being transported to the school. It's an African school, completely African. And it's just incredible, the performance over there. So like that, there are hope. There are islands of hope that you see across the country. And I do believe that it's about good management, about functionality, it's about commitment, and it's about the quality of the process at the end of the day. And I think, Jay, you're right. The solution is in quality. It's not in terms of research, but what kind of quality passes do you attract? So I am thinking that I am aware of examples. I visited these schools, and I mean, people would be surprised. But to tell you that you receive no less than 50 distinctions in mathematics and science year after year from Mills, that more than 350 learners pass matric on the, you know, used to in the higher grade, but couldn't get more than 50%. That you probably would have one third, or if not half of your actuary coming from those schools, Denron and Billy. So here's a good example. In Hope was supposed to be right down, but you have islands of hope insofar as that's concerned. With regard to the issues of the Eastern Cape, I thought perhaps given the fact that responsibility, we carry some part of it through the ministers, the interministerial committee. You know, the peripheral issues, I call them peripheral, but although they're important, would be the provision of your stationery, your textbooks, your transportation, your nutrition. You remember all those things were suspended, and as a result, we had to intervene. And in the beginning, the intervention was not very welcome. Today, we have to say, please, telling us, please stay on. Because what has happened is the spirit of working together was collaborative, was not adversarial, was not hostile. And what we said we would do and should do and must continue to do is to ensure that we develop capacity within the prompt in order to enable them to develop the sustainability to carry this process forward. And I think that has yielded great, great returns because there's no economy between the national department, the provincial department. There's a realization that working towards a common goal and therefore things have changed. So your transportation is more or less sorted out, your nutrition is sorted out, your stationery and your textbooks, you save millions of rand, just in terms of good procurement practices over there, and textbooks were delivered on time over there. With regard to one issue, which is a huge issue, not only in the Eastern Cape, but countrywide, you've raised, members have raised it, is post provision. You know, your temporary teachers, matching competent skills, how do you match them in appropriate places? We are still seized with that particular task in the Eastern Cape. Because it is an old problem of more than one or two decades. And to correct it, you can't possibly do it in 6 months. It's going to take a lot more time, but progress is being made in this particular regard. I support the minister in saying the time has come for us to seriously assess, and the National Council of Provinces would have to basically do an evaluation to say, have we moved forward in terms of what were the key reasons for the intervention? Is it time that we look at maybe converting a Section 101B to Section 101A and to provide support over there? And I think it's not too far away. It's within the horizon, and we're quite comfortable. But what I can assure the committee is that the collaboration is extremely good. The other reality, and you know, we speak about it, is this. And we talked about infrastructure earlier, Chair, and you did, and some of the members raised it. You know, 8 years ago, the phenomenon of mud schools existed in Limpopo, KwaZulu-Natal, in Mpumalanga, parts of Northwest, and the Eastern Cape. The reality today is, if you go to the Northwest, you would hardly find a mud school. You might find some under schools, but you would hardly find a mud school. KZN is busy on its last mud school that's being replaced. Mpumalanga is almost eliminated except for exceptionally inclement weather where you basically, it's a moving target, but it basically eradicates the phenomenon. The only place where you have this phenomenon really is in the Eastern Cape mud schools. And it is not because of any, not because of government policy, it's because of poor governance within that particular province. So that is why we get the intervention. So if there was sound governance, resources were allocated, I think that would have been corrected earlier, and therefore, yeah, the national intervention and the CD project that is
basically focusing in terms of mud schools and unsafe schools in the Eastern Cape more than in the other provinces. You might wonder why the 25 schools in the Eastern Cape, in the Western Cape. There's a growing population there. There are needs. You go to Khayelitsha, you go to the rural areas, you go to Mitchell's Plain. You need schools in those particular areas, and therefore 25 schools will be erected there. And our perspective is that as we look at needs, we don't regionalize it. There are our children wherever they might be, and we've got to deal with a particular matter. Now, I think the DG will speak about post-provision, but Funza Lushaka, and I know I'm taking some work of the officials, where the deployment of Funza Lushaka in the earlier days was very, very poorly organized. They have a dedicated team now that looks at deployment. In other words, their task is solely to look at deployment of the teachers who are at universities once they complete. And that has contributed significantly to the improvement. We've also looked at the manner in which we can basically provide these opportunities so that it goes to all the 9 provinces. It focuses both on primary school, particularly foundation phase, mathematics, science, languages, and other areas of need. So there's always a need analysis. We've got the district to play an important role. To say, within your district, what are your needs? Can you provide us with candidates for Funza Lushaka so that we can fulfill the needs of those districts? And interestingly, all the districts are now contributing to nominees of the Funza Lushaka project, which means that when these learners qualify, they are able to be absorbed by the district in the areas of need identified by the district. We've also said that those who have got bachelor's degrees, whether it's BSc or Bachelor of Arts, have an opportunity to go into the teaching profession, and therefore we should encourage them to join, do the postgraduate certificate in education, and you would then have a teacher in a shorter space of time with a less investment. And that is also working well. So I think as a result of this particular process and the engagement with universities, with students, with provinces, we're able to refine that. And deployment would be much, much more efficient insofar as that is concerned. I can definitely tell you that from where we were 4 years ago or 3 years ago, where we are now, there is a significant improvement. The common thing is the nutrition thing. It's a very difficult thing. At one stage, you have the sibling in primary school that is defect, high school is not being fed, and now we've basically expanded it. It's a process. So we're working very closely with social development in terms of dealing with areas of poverty, how you eradicate poverty, and I think the solution would definitely lie in collaborating very closely with the department. But we won't be able to give any immediate solution. But what we can say to you, for example, there's some good news for you. The Department of Social Development recognizes the enormous work that has been done by the Department of Basic Education in terms of early child development. They say, we've got to actually do no more. What about the first 1,000 years? How do you get social development, health and education to work on the cognitive, emotional, physical development of a child in the first 1,000? So a program is being dealt with, and therefore your nutrition now is going to basically reach even those 0 to 3 years of children as a result of a program that we referred to. And I think there would be particular hope insofar as that is concerned. Now, the Eastern Cape, just to say to you that there is a plan that has been adopted, accepted, a turnaround plan for the Eastern Cape that deals with administration specifically. Because if at all there is a challenge in the Eastern Cape, it's about human resource capacity. And I mean, just yesterday the minister and I are sitting with one of the particular issues that are bedeviling the Eastern Cape. Let me share with you. At one stage, the Eastern Cape said there are 600 and something projects of infrastructure. We said, where are the projects? What are the processes? Who's responsible for it? Today we can tell you that we have a photograph of each and every project. So I want to see each and every project. I want a report on a month of it. I want a photograph of it. I want to know who is responsible. I want to know what the contract is and who the contractor is, so that we can basically manage that process. I'm not saying solve all the problems, but as a result of those interventions, we're able to do much better in terms of that particular process. So the collaboration is indeed helped. Now with regard to targets, just 3 or 4 years ago, we couldn't even talk about targets in grades 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I think what the DG has said in his contribution is that with the introduction of ANA, we were able to have a diagnostic assessment of the capacity or the capability of every learner in grade 1, grade 2, grade 3, grade 4, grade 5. We had to do that. We had to find out how the learners are performing. But we also had to do something in the context of a particular school and a particular circuit and a particular district. So therefore, the position here is the following. This is very, very important. People tend to forget that this is the reality. That every school has a responsibility of ensuring that the NR result is sent to each parent. And that there should be a conversation between the parent and the teacher in terms of the achievement or lack thereof in terms of literacy and numeracy. Secondly, that the NR result must be part of the school improvement plan. The statutory requirement to say, how do we deal with the issues of literacy and numeracy? What remediation measures should be taking place? Thirdly, that there should be an item analysis of every paper across every grade to say, well, we've seen the paper here for grade one. These are the strong areas, these are the weak areas, and this is how the remediation is going to take place. So the school has to do it, and the district has to support it in that particular process. And again, some districts are doing very well, others are behind. But I think the norms are being established and attitude towards the value of it. This enables every district then to say, these are our targets for learning improvement. So if you start off with a base of 14%, you can't go to 65%. A district not too far from there might have a base of 35%. They might say, well, 60% is fine. So, you know, you've got to be realistic in terms of your targets. But what ENA does, it allows you to have targets from grade 1 to grade 2, include grade 9 as well now. Because those are important at this point. I mean, 7,200,000 children were tested. And that's quite internationally benchmarked test. And I think that is now basically, we can soon say that every learner across each grade will be tested. And the key component is literacy and numeracy. You know, you can't test in every single subject, but at least in literacy and numeracy, you would be able to see what progress can be made insofar as that is concerned. With regard to grade R, and again, I know the experts of ECDI, you know, 5 years ago, there was absolutely no norm with regard to grade R. Firstly, there were no resources. Now we say in every single class we've got a workbook in each one of the official languages. Remember the workbook, the resources we provided to grade R were only English for one thing. And I think you were one of the persons that raised it in a very important room party conference. And the minister, I sat down to say, well, you know, that is the reality. And therefore we make sure that we develop workbooks in grade R. Today, all grade R have workbooks in a language that they understand, and we've introduced the first additional language as an important area. Secondly, there was no qualification requirement for a practitioner in grade R. Today, almost 9%, I'd say at least 80% of your practitioners have at least a level 4 qualification. And we are arguing that level 4 is not high enough that we should have a level 6. But you can't do that arbitrarily. You've got to do so progressively so that we can now say, work towards a level 6. What that would then do is enable us to get these educators drawn into professionalized their practice and to become teachers in the particular school. So we now have a curriculum, we have norms for the kind of learning environment, we have resources that are uniform across the country and used across the country, and we have development programs for our practitioners. So I think there is strong movement all around in terms of that particular aspect, and I'm very, very hopeful insofar as that is concerned. Now, inclusive education has always been a challenge. We've declared, the minister has declared this year and year for inclusive education. But some things that we can celebrate. One is that our works are ingrained. Secondly, in terms of the curriculum development, there is differentiated learning that is teaching that is taking place. In other words, as the people are being trained, they are trying to basically teach, in terms of mainstreaming, to teach in a differentiated way so that special needs, inclusive education, becomes a reality in the development of educators as they deal with the curriculum. Now, you know, we have trained for this phase of the curriculum more than 154,000 teachers on the current phase of a year. And that's quite remarkable. And we are saying that that is not sufficient. Because what Neil says is what we've been arguing about. But even if you give workbooks, but you don't tell the teachers how to use those workbooks, they have no value. So in each and every teacher center, there's Ms. Kujana, you will confirm, the use of a workbook, you know, some people say, but, you know, it's not necessary. These people have been teachers for a long time. Becomes central to what has been done. The unions have agreed on it. The departments agreed on it, and that is going to become a reality over there. So I thought the challenges are still huge. But with regard to physical instruction, no new school can be built without access. And we've appealed to all our provinces to ensure that schools that are existing must become accessible for people with disability, especially those with wheelchairs, and it's critical. We can't say it shouldn't happen, it must happen, it must be a reality in the lives of our people. The the technical schools, I'm glad you raised this. You know, from the Western Cape right to South Cape to the Northern Cape, that has been the most underutilized bus by province, including the Western Cape. You know, usually Gauteng and Western Cape are usually on top of it. You know, lady, a technical school, all provinces are your free. They get the resources as conditional grants, they haven't utilized it. But we've been putting so much of pressure to the extent that we said the national department is going to drive this process and determine what are the needs for your technical schools and buy and procure and do that on your behalf. Suddenly there's movement. Suddenly there's movement. And if you go across the budgets of the provinces, you'll see, wow, you know, the year before, look how little expenditure took place. Now there's real movement out there because indeed it should become a reality in the educational landscape. So I say that there is hope in terms of that. You know, one other interesting thing about inclusive education is this, that there was never screening before. Now we basically work collaboratively with health. We're able to be screening all our children, grades 1, 2, 3, and 4, if I'm not mistaken. In quintiles 1 and 2. 1 and 2 at the moment. For hearing, for visual deficiency deficits, immunization, and the work. So this is taking place and it's becoming a reality in the educational landscape. And that helps in terms of inclusive education because we are able to pick up deficiencies and be able to deal with them timely and be able to assist learners in terms of that particular reality. Now, you know, the minister has spoken to say that these are our responsibilities. But what have we done beyond our responsibilities? Literacy and numeracy is the responsibility of each provincial department. We've taken it upon ourselves from our budget to provide more than 52 million words to our kids. Math and science is a common practice. Every grade 9, grade 10, 11, and 12 learners has a textbook in mathematics and science provided by the national department through our budget, not the provincial department. Grades 7, 8, and 9 have on math, science, and technology, right, DG? And this year, grade 4, 5, and 6 also have a textbook home activity book in math, science, and technology. What we're trying to do slowly, surely, is to say how we can't leave our children behind. Even if we've got to use our own resources or raise resources for that particular purpose, across the board, across the five quintiles, it's not only for quintile 1, 2, it's across the five quintiles, we've got to do it. The interesting part is our workbooks are used by all provinces, in all schools. Our math, science, and technology books, as well as our science techniques, are being used in all provinces. And the private schools, the independent schools, are beginning to ask us, can we utilize your resources? So because we're making sure that they are quality assured, and I thought that's the good news. And what also means that they're saving millions and millions of rand, because provinces don't have to buy this resource. They are being made available, and are being made available on time. So your delivery time from the national department is like, you know, 98% of them delivered very the week before it should be delivered. And that's how efficient we are as a national department. But you still have your glitches over there. Math and science, I thought our strategy for math, science, and technology textbooks is one of them. Content knowledge is another one. Funa Lushaka is another one. Teacher resource centers to deal with math and science. And the time is now arrived. What is done differently? And you know, thank the minister for establishing this wonderful relationship with unions. You might think there is an integrated relationship between the department and unions. It's not so. For the first time, I'm telling you it's not so. And I tell you why. Because your curriculum, your national curriculum assessment policy statement was with the unions. Your teacher development today is taking place with the unions. So they are integrally a part of it. And for the first time, we have an integrated strategy on professional development, of which the unions, all the union members, are a significant part. But what we are saying there is that these teacher resource centers must be utilized by all unions. And you must say the best, it doesn't matter which union they come from, to teach mathematics in grade 10 or 11 for purposes of in-depth training. And I think that would make a huge difference over there. So these are some of the questions. There are others that one has to speak on. Perhaps just the last one about the dinner lady. You know, dinner lady has been become taken for granted in some schools. And with all the provinces, you know, they get extra resources for additional teacher, they get calculators, they get textbooks, they get ICT. They can't deliver to us a 30 or 40% pass. You have that right, you must earn that right to be in our lady school. And now when the conditional grant is withdrawn, it's not withdrawn because you're doing well, it's withdrawn because you are consistently doing poorly. And that decision is not a national decision. It's a decision of the province. So the province says, look, we've given you 3 years to improve. We've provided you with all the resources. We've given you an additional teacher. You're still not showing any signs of improvement. We should rather take these resources to a school that's showing better potential, and that's when the resources get withdrawn. But it's very rare. It's perhaps less than 1% of the schools where these resources have been withdrawn. So I thought, Mr. and Chair, these are my responses over there. Obviously, the better and more reliable information lies with the officials that are here.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I will answer some of the questions, and I'll indicate as I go along which officials will take up the other questions. Please indicate to us in terms of time, Honorable Chairperson, I will be able to stop or go quicker. In the minute to answer the question about the movement, let me just add to reinforce what the Minister said. We did some research recently on the top 500 schools. The ratio for learners enrollment that is 85% and higher, or 100% African children enrollment, and especially poor African children. And we find that poor African children are better off in these schools, firstly, as opposed to former model schools. These schools do very well. And 184 of these schools, out of the 500, the vast majority, are from the local. If you look at Gauteng and Western Cape, for example, four of these schools are in the Western Cape. So there are many examples. We're just listing here 500 across the country. And these schools are located in townships, in rural areas, that are performing exceptionally well. And here we're talking about great jobs and stuff, as the Minister said. So there's the popular one, and there's one that through this research we've identified. And what we're asking is what's making these schools work, and how do we reinforce it. And very often, it's about just the right mix of parental involvement. In a constructive way in the school, making sure the appointments are correct, the teachers are supported, learners are at school, teachers are at school, etc. And I emphasize the point that these are poor schools. Honorable Nure, in terms of other questions, the Minister's answered the questions about appointments. Prince of the Sharpa answered that. Addressed that one quite extensively. In terms of PEDs and the fiscal discipline mechanism there, over the years, as the Minister has indicated, you know, there are provincial responsibilities, but the Minister through CEM does try to monitor and ensure interventions are happening. We created in the department a director that monitors provincial budgeting and expenses. They monitor AG reports, and they visit each and every province where they meet the senior management, including CFO of that province, and discuss their budget, their expenditure, and their audit general plan. These reports are presented to the Deputy Minister and Minister on a regular basis. It's a very detailed report. And based on that, we respond to what needs to be done. In instances when it's really higher, it's raised very directly with the province at the level of heads of department. If we don't succeed at that level, we bring the executive in to deal with the matter. So there's an active engagement that goes on with the province. Obviously, in the case of Limpopo and Eastern Cape, this mediation wasn't raised at the time, despite us raising. And there's records that it was raised by Treasury and us. And that's why Section 101B became unaffected. But it wasn't like no one was aware that we were heading towards this thing because of the poor financial management problems. The school nutrition program that has been answered, government is working on a food security strategy that has to address, you know, children who've just gone out of the net, but also others who are experiencing food insecurity. So that's where the cooperation is happening between different departments. Honorable Ranto, in terms of Professor Edmund, obviously, all the questions have been answered. The 74%, and why is it 74%? When we set the target, we set targets for a number of years, and we're planning to achieve 75% in 2014. That is why we plan to achieve 74% in 2013. But we overshot the mark. In part because our system performed, and in part because the Minister doesn't worry what's in our ADC. He gives us the timing at the beginning of the year. So we've got to now formally, because this is a legal document, we've got to formally come back to the National Assembly and SBOP to say we're revising our target. So indeed, we will revise the target. The Minister has now told us
she publicly saying 75% for 2013, but it's now it's not really the percentage that's the issue. It's about what's in that 75%. So we're focusing on the bachelor's, we're focusing on math, science, all those things which we present. And we're asking honorable members not only to look at the percentage, because we're focusing a lot on the other things. What happens is, as you go higher, it becomes more difficult to increase the percentage faster. We also don't want to get into the danger of chasing passes. And then you lose out on your bachelor's. Why? Because this one's not going to make it, make them drop out, this one mustn't make it, steps are getting it. Exactly. So we not only monitor passes, we monitor what's under the pathway, bachelor's, etc., but we also monitor dropouts, because we don't want gate keeping. So if you have a high pathway but good high dropouts, we say, no, hang on, there's something going on here. And we look at it very, very carefully. We're now going a step further. We don't only look at dropouts in school. We look at the percentage of that 8 cohort in the population. And we say how many of them are getting great jobs. Now that one, you cannot throw people out of school or whatever, so the percentage of your problems is going to go down. So that's why we're trying to ensure that we can't just take a part of it. But bottom line is we'll come back and we'll revise that part of it by bringing into account all these other things. So we don't create what's called planning a perverse incentive to the system, to principals. Grade R, teacher training, yielding results have been answered, the inclusive education. Mr. Mwen will speak in more detail about this. But we do a lot. We believe that our progress is not optimal. But over the last year, 2 years, we've been doing a lot in terms of picking up early learning challenges through integrated health programs, through CF. And we're trying to ensure that these are addressed. There's also funding which we provide directly from national, but also problems we provide to intervene early in terms of crutches, wheelchairs, and that sort of thing. For special schools. But I repeat that we need to do much more there. Honorable Khasmini, in terms of the question, do we work with the ACC? Yes, we work with them very, very strongly. Currently, in terms of law, and we're saying, let's just not worry about the law only, let's make sure we have a credible plan. We work with the ACC through the ECDC CETA to develop what's called a sector plan. It is a supply-demand plan. We've got our own technical expertise, they've got, and in the last year we've improved that planning dramatically. So we want to ensure that that drives planning in the system. So it's very strong collaboration, and we're working with universities. Now, having that plan and output is fine, but for us in education, it's about what the quality of that output. What NIDU is telling us, what we suspect, is that the quality is not good, especially where we need it in a foundation phase, in the intermediate space. You know, those are critical areas which currently we're not producing the kind of quality we're looking for. In-service training is not good enough. So in addition to planning supply demand, we're working very strongly with the ACC and the universities to look at the quality question very, very carefully. Education enrichment there, Mr. Mwale will speak about that. Technical schools, Mr. Mwale will speak about that. Honorable Mushodi, in terms of dropout and retention, let me just contextualize this by saying we are very concerned about dropouts. But honorable members, very often when you read figures in the newspaper about dropouts, they are really excessive. When you try to correct them, it seems like you're being defensive. Very often people look at the figure, which you're not quoting today, about how many went to grade one and how many finished grade 12. We keep saying that's a very dangerous, misleading assessment to make. Because if you look at 12 years ago from today, there wasn't much grade R. So what parents did, and we know this is fact, they used grade 1 as grade R. So they put their children into grade 1 as young as 3 and 4 with the intention of them not passing. Now that's why we have over-enrollment in grade. If you look at that over-enrollment and you compare it to grade 12, you exaggerate the problem. We do have a problem, but you exaggerate the problem. The reality is you ought to have maybe about, say, 800,000, 900,000 in grade 1. Remember, we also had declining fertility at that point. Yet the figures show 1.2 million. It's almost like a 30%, 40% higher than it should be. And then if you take that to grade 12, when things start correcting itself, it looks bad. So I'm not saying we don't have a problem. I want to say we do have a problem. But I'm saying that problem is really exaggerated. Second point, the dropout rate starts becoming a problem around about grade 9 and 10. So the study quoted 56% between grade 10 and grade 12 dropping out. It's not true. We have a high dropout rate, but it's not true. Let me give you a figure there. That in grade 10, the dropout rate in 2009 and 10 stood at 10.6%, whereas 2007 and 8 it was 11%. The figures I'm giving you showing how high it is, but also that it's coming down over the years. If you look at grade 11, in 2007 and 8 it was 11.4%, and then 13.4% went slightly up there. But grade 12, it was 12.3% in 2007 and 8, and then 9.3% is down in 2009 and 10. So you can see that's not 50%, 9.3% or 9.10. So again, I make the point on the chairperson. It is too high for us. If you read the action plan, we identify it as a problem. But again, it's not the exaggerated figure that people quote. So it's important to be careful about some of these research organizations not to sensationalize things. And they do very simplistic calculations to come up with this thing. You know, you've got to understand the data, understand how to do the calculations. The other issue on the chairperson is that it is government policy that we've got alternative pathways post-general education and training. So the fact that that child is not in school doesn't mean that child is out. We're working with DADT to work out alternative pathways. Those learners get into that alternative pathway. And honorable members should be aware that as years go by, it will become more of a phenomenon than this. As the alternative options kick in, as FET, Fenton, etc. So ACT is working a lot on that. We work with them. And we'll see that happen. So our important thing is, if the learner disappears from the school, where is that learner going? So we're working on a system which we're strengthening, which we're implementing. It's a learner unit record system called LURIS. We want to link that to DACT so we can track learners about where they are in the system. So I thought that's an important one just for me to emphasize that was raised. The virtual ECD, you know, we are almost, by most country standards, we are in universal ECD. Because one about 94% of children attend grade R in this country, of which about 84% have a public school ECD. So it's so universal. Some parents don't want to send their children to grade R in public schools, and these are wealthier parents. Our big problem is to fund policy. And as the Deputy Minister said, you know, we've improved dramatically our inputs. We never had LTSM with the diversity in grade R and under. We're dealing with educators. I don't want to repeat that.
DJ?
Yes.
I'm going to request that you don't repeat what the minister responded to, so that I'm going to give you 3 minutes which you actually to respond to.
Okay, let me choose the important one. I don't want Honorable De Villiers and Honorable Farber to keep me of not answering your question.
Are you working together?
Honorable Chairperson, can I hand over to my colleague in case you have something there with your permission, please?
The question about how many technical schools do we have 960 technical schools in the country, 86 are private or independent, the rest are public technical schools. Unfortunately, the system does not create the allocation of teachers to different types of public schools. It will take some time for us to get that information as to how many teachers are attached to this particular school, so we'll get that information. About inclusive education, as the DC correctly pointed out, the impression might be created that we've not made much progress. The White Paper 6 in 2001 indicated that we should have full-service schools in 20 years. And down 11 years, we have 553 schools. That's just an example. In 22 schools for the time, all of those schools have equipment operation with differentiated capacity on a level of participation. We have a comprehensive plan working with the
branch responsible for teachers, to train teachers in Braille, to train teachers who handle learners with high experience in disabilities, various disabilities, and that plan is implemented. I think this is also a few areas, but I thought that they were not become the true and the perfect teacher. Or maybe the one that I think the branch responsible for teacher might have fit in as well. Indeed, the capacity building of subject advisors is an area that we only have started paying attention to, I think, from last year. And PEM and ESCOM have acknowledged that, giving very clear directives to all of us learning boards to come up with comprehensive plan to address the needs of subject advisors. We started with English, as English is the intro to particular intermediate phase. So we started there and we hope that we will include other areas. We have also started a part of preparing the system, training subject advisors and teachers in the university.
Thank you, Didi. Just in response to the question around training of teachers for sports, indeed that program is continuing. In this financial year, the Department of Sports and Recreation has made available funding for coach-specific training and teachers and coaches, but also in terms of DBE with UNICEF and other partners focusing on physical education. This year we start training for foundation education teachers, and it's a 3-year program, so that's continuing.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. The last part was around the strengthening of administrative processes for the appointment of principals and in schools, with specific focus on the selection processes as well as the local authority. Because this matter is very important for the department in terms of providing such guidelines in how best provinces can be able to ensure that we strengthen measures that are found within the PEM document as well as within SASA in that regard. As well as one other aspect which was a request from HEPOM was around the subject advisors that we should also include that special requirement of strengthening the appointment of such advisors in that regard. Thank you very much.
Honorable members, all your questions have been answered. Let me, before I look, Minister, I must indicate that I'm happy that when you talk about the private schools, you pointed out the challenges, the issue of leadership, the issue of the gospel, and really, literally, to DJ, I can be impressed when we talk about 184 schools and say this is, because all of the schools, if you go, we are still having a challenge of leadership. That is why we see that, you know, even, I don't want to talk about the reason before because it was not my intention, maybe the way I put it, but the reality is that when you go down, we've got schools, our public schools are not well resourced. We don't have like committed teachers. We don't have principals. This is the reality. And it's something that when you talk about 96%, it's a high number. What is that we are doing to answer that? It's a challenge that we have to deal with it. We can't just ignore it and say 5% is private schools. But we want at least to be somewhere there at public schools. I think it's a challenge. Minister, you talked about the issue of the Eastern Cape when we were talking about, when we talked about the great hours, the coverage that it, but one was expecting that if you say down the line, you know, it drops, what are the reasons? Because you can't just say there's this overall coverage, but on the line, this is declining. What are the reasons? One expected, as the department was picked it up, what are the reasons? How do you do to retain to deal with that matter? Maybe if you can respond just to that for this.
Let's agree with you that your observations, I think, also are concerns. As we say in the department, every child is important, so that we shouldn't have a phenomenon where I could say in Gauteng that the Telvisa Midrand Belt, whereas there will still be, so we should be saying, it should be an exception that schools are not functional, so you can deal with it. It shouldn't be an exception that there are schools that are functional. And I think that's where we take our clue from, And that's why we've been targeting those schools that are not performing. To say, what are the issues? So they picked up that so multi-grade schools, so rural schools, hard-to-reach schools, and are dealing with those systemic issues which touch or affect the majority of our schools. But we are also saying, in the context of our reality, our schools are not resourced adequately, and what is it that we do in the meantime? Because if we say we are only going to be able, for example, to eradicate mass schools by 2015, it's the reality of our lives. We just can't do it any other way. So which means we'll still continue to have schools which are under the resourced until that time that we restore. So there is also the reality of what are the financial constraints, the human resource constraints. So there's a reality, there's a real world in which we're operating. If we should be a whole school, say one our kids will be mental science to pass, but we don't have mental science teachers, won't train them overnight. So there's the things which we can do. We say in terms of resourcing, if we had our way, we'll have all the schools with libraries. We are quite aware that we will not be able to do it. We won't have librarians, we don't have space, one won't even have teaching space. We don't think it's a reality that we can go out and say that there's so many schools don't have libraries, so through some magic wand we'll have libraries. So what is it we're doing? We really are now talking about access. Well, the main thing, the library is to give children access to books, to say how do we fast track that access to books whilst we're sorting out the libraries. So I'm saying there is a real world which we're operating, which has its own constraints and realities. And what we're confronting is as we move to 2030, what is it that we do to protect our kids from all of these situations? We have most of our schools without labs. We are aware. We can even tell you. There are certain people who tell me that 75% of schools don't have libraries. They get the statistics from me. We know which schools don't have libraries. We know how many schools don't have libraries. We know how many schools don't have a lab. The question is, what do we do? Because we won't have them tomorrow. We're big science kids in school to make sure that indeed, as we move towards this full provision, there is something, because the main aim of the lab is to give children an opportunity to experiment. That's what the aim of the lab is. So let's give them an opportunity to experience or bring science kids in school. So that the constraints are going to be there. They're the reality of our lives, but we have to protect our children as we move there. So that's the best point I'm making to that. Our schools are, and it's not that we really wish to. If I had my way, Minister, within a year, I would have one lab. So when people accuse me of not talking about libraries, it's not because I run a library. I just can't have libraries. It's as simple as all that. When they accuse us of not having labs, I wish our schools could have labs. And that's why I'm brave enough to publish information about labs that are not there, libraries are not there. But what we're doing is to say, in the meantime, what is it that we do to try to try our kids? So that's the reality that we're talking about. But I'm not sure if I misunderstand what you're saying. I'm saying it's not only all private schools in Kakuru. Some of them are flying by night. But I'm saying private schools are 4% of our schooling system. And therefore, for me, it's not even an issue or a discussion. It's a right that parents have for religious purposes. Some are very necessary for children with special needs. Kids are autistic, so you find that in the main system they're not provided. For me, there are just two minor to talk about. One we have to talk about, which is our money, it's a public system. Right? So it's a public system. This 96%, we're not saying 4% is not important. We're saying 96%, that's where the children that we're supposed to serve as government, the children of the poor, are. And that's what I think our conservation should be about. It should not be about kids who go to private schools, because that's fine, they're safe, they're protected, but this bulk of kids we're talking about. So I'm not saying 4% is not important, but I'm saying they're fine, let's not even bother about them, they're well catered for. That's why the parents need to take them to private schools, which means they can't sustain them. As a public representative, let's worry about this 96% of kids who are in overcrowded schools, of kids who are in hard to reach schools, of kids who are in multi-grading schools, and I think our conversation should be around those two, and that's what we're trying to turn around. And when I'm in chair, we will come talk to you about this collaboration. It's not only around partnerships that we are working on with the private sector. That's not the only story. But what we're saying as a department, of all the list of things that we're talking about, we think we have enough policies. We think we have the fundamentals in place. What we have to do to crack the system and make it work. And that's why we say we're going to a different, because most of the things we need to do don't need money. Just want us to get things happening. So we're taking the first 20 districts for this year. For instance, we'll go to Waterberg, profile all the schools in Waterberg, and say what are the specific things we're supposed to do school by school. If it means that it's a broken toilet, we fix it. If it's a broken door, we fix it. But they have a 5-year plan of turning around those districts, working now trying to get synergy between province, national, and ourselves and all our departments. Because some of the things which constrain us have nothing, or we don't have power over. Your crossing bridges don't have power over. Your connectivity, sometimes we can want electricity and have computers, but it has no electric supply in the area. There's nothing we can do with it, but then to fold arms. So there are some of the things that we require other departments to assist us with, and that's why we're working on this collaboration, so that we systematically go and do exactly what you're saying you want to see happen. Deal with the problems. Some of the problems are small, but some are big. I mean, the problems are about teacher things in this thing. It's huge. Because we're dealing with a big problem that's over 20 years, people have not moved. Because in all earnest, don't wake up in the morning for a teacher sitting at meeting and can say, go to Kofun Baba. Because it's an issue that we should not have allowed to fester for a long time. So some of the problems are deep. And if you don't have teachers, it's an issue. It doesn't matter what you bring. You can bring labs, you can bring everything, you can bring things of the art. But if you don't bring a teacher, you've not brought education. You might as well lose everything else but have a teacher. So some of the problems are big. Let's say the Eastern Cape example. There's a proper example, for instance, of teachers in Rwanda who are not moving. So we're attending to that, Chair. As I say, I think we're on the same wavelength with yourself. We're just saying, let's focus on the 96%, see what the problems are, deal with it, that's where South African children are in this 96% of schools. The 4% is not a problem. As I say, in terms of numbers, it's not a problem. It's a drop in the ocean, so we can't waste energy talking about the 4% of people who are affluent, who are able to move. I mean, kids of rich parents will always go to your bishop, your world of schools, and all sorts of schools. It's a choice of parents. They want their kids to be 15 plus. And the majority of African parents choose public schools. Extremely choose public schools. Your water club and your school, those are public schools that we can pride ourselves with. But we're saying there are just not enough of those water clubs of your Parktown boys, Parktown girls. We have your samples of your Catholic schools, which always give us 100% in countries, but we don't want them to be an exception. I think that's the point I'm agreeing with you. We want it to be a rule that every school functions well. And that's why we're saying that the benefit child is important. So every child must have access to good education in this 96%, because that's what our responsibility is. And that's what I think that is.
Thank you, Minister, but you answer the other one of the Eastern Cape later. the grades are...
Which is very revealing to us, that our investment, because the same investment is not pushing, it's not like an old program that we've had of the ECB coverage. We're saying immediately we're beginning to see an investment. And what it said, which is an indictment against us, that the investment in ECB prepares kids for us. Because of the poor skills in the system now, in primary schools, that investment doesn't last longer. Mm-hmm. Like a person who puts a good foundation, the next one who comes in does not sustain that which you receive. And it's confirmed by all the reports, the new reports, just talks about poor teaching in our primary schools. So we have this good foundation, it doesn't last longer, because in the system, there isn't good teaching, which helps us, and that's why as this kid grow up, it begins to decline, because we are not sustaining this investment that we're putting in the ECB sector. And that's why we're giving lots of attention to your coalition phase and your intermediate phase, because this very investment can be sustained. So it's not sustained because in your primary school, there's just not a good teaching, as I said, contrary by most of the sector. That's why there's a drop when kids stay longer.
Thank you, Minister. Thank you, Honorable Minister. Let me just take this opportunity to thank everybody for the participation. And I must just indicate and repeat what you said, that this is the plan, and this is how, you know, at the end of the year, this is what we, if you come back to report, the issues that you have agreed upon today will be reporting on the same issues, not other issues that was not part of the plan. Thank you.
Thank you.